I'm in love with the Chicago media.
You are Locked On Fantasy Basketball, your daily podcast on fantasy basketball. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team, every day.
Hello and welcome to the Locked On Fantasy Basketball podcast brought to you by Basketball Monster. My name is Josh Lloyd and I am the lead fantasy analyst at basketballmonster.com, and you can find me as always on Twitter at redrock_beeble, another couple of accounts you should go and follow: Basketball Monster, which is at Bask Monster, and of course the Locked On Podcast Network, which is at Locked On NBA Net. So you can find out when your favorite Locked On Podcast Network podcast is coming out. We have got lots of action to talk about from Thursday. There were four games, including one over in London. Shout out to the NBA. Bring one to Australia, even if it's a preseason game. I don't give a shit. Just bring a game to Australia. We've got nine games for Friday to preview. We have got a player spotlight on an injured, injured star. Let's leave it at that. Player spotlight on an injured star and the question of the day. So
let's get to it.
Michael Bolton bringing the hot fire. The monstrous line of the night goes to the man who also gets the young gun of the night, and that is Lonzo Ball of the Los Angeles Lakers. 18-10-6 for Lonzo. 4 triples, 4 steals, and 7 of 11 from the field. This bloke is the 59th ranked player this season, shooting just 36% from the field, shooting just 48% from the line, and having a true shooting of just 44%. Numbers which are horrific. He is still a top 60 player, averaging 10 points per game. This guy is going to be a top 20 fantasy player at some point. In fact, over the last month, he is a top 20 guy. He's the 17th ranked player because he's shooting 44% from the field, still 50% from the line, but he barely goes there. But he started hitting his threes and he started hitting his shots in those last 10 games. He's at 14.5 points, 3 threes a game. This is closer to what he did at UCLA. 7.9 rebounds, 7.1 assists, 2 steals, 0.8 blocks. He's going to be a top 20 player, and don't be surprised next season if he is a top 20 guy for the entirety of the season. You will not be able to draft him outside the top 3 rounds next season. I can almost 100% guarantee you that. The shooting is coming around. He's looking significantly more comfortable with everything that he's doing, and that's going to work out great. I had my concerns about him, and obviously stuff didn't work out at the beginning of the season. He was struggling so much with his shot, but once that came around, everything else was fine. The numbers are all fine. And I legitimately got multiple questions about Lonzo Ball. Man, I can't hold him. Got to drop him. And you know, I thought it was insanity at the time. And obviously that's turning out to be the case here as well. I think that we're going to have from now on a top 50 finish to the season for Ball as he continues to improve the shooting. At least we're not talking about a bloke shooting 55% from the field. He has improved and now he's at 44%, which is nothing. It's still terribly below average. But he's a 17th ranked player, shooting 44%. That's how good these other numbers are for Lonzo. And sure, you know, 3 threes a game is probably an unrealistic expectation. 2 steals per game, maybe it's a little bit high. Might not be. 0.8 blocks, you go, he's a guard. But that's not crazy for him. This is a guy who is an aggressive shot blocker. He's an aggressive rebounder. He's an aggressive assist guy. He is going to have multiple top 20 fantasy seasons, and don't be shocked if he sneaks into the top 10 at some point. And this is without him being necessarily a great, yeah, actual on-court player or all-star level player or anything like that. His game is just so suited to fantasy and to the fantasy rankings that he is going to be right up there, and he is going to return those numbers on a consistent basis. So shout out to Lonzo Ball for turning things around and really starting to come together in these last couple of weeks, and hopefully it can persist. I think it can. I think there was a lot of, you know, weird shit going on with him at the beginning of the year. I do think that it will start to come around, and we're seeing some positive signs from Lonzo at the moment, and that's all you hope for these rookies, and they do start to get better as the season wears on. The waiver wire line of the night goes to Freddie Van Vliet of the Toronto Raptors. Yes, Fred Van Vliet, the man who just lit up the Cavs in a absolute smashing for the Toronto Raptors. It's a huge result to see Toronto do that. I know it's in January, and in the end of everything, it doesn't actually mean anything, but to get the Raptors having such a big victory, as improved as they've been this season, and to do it without Kyle Lowry and Serge Ibaka is absolutely huge. We'll talk a little bit more about Van Vliet. Now, 22 points for him, 6 triples, 4 rebounds, 4 assists, and a steal, and he was very, very hot from the field, going 8 of 11 in total. Van Vliet's shown way more this season than I think a lot of people would have anticipated. Over the last 2 weeks, in 20 minutes a game, he's a top 175 player. Got the extra minutes today, of course, because Kyle Lowry was out and because he was shooting well, so he got the extra playing time over DeLon Wright. I don't think we need to get overly excited here about Van Vliet. Many people asking me, oh, do I go and grab Van Vliet now or DeLon Wright? It's still Wright to me because he's going to be that guy who comes in and plays at the 1 and plays at the 2 and plays at the 3 no matter what happens with Lowry, whereas Van Vliet is not going to be shooting 75% from the field in every game, and he's going to not be able to produce these sort of numbers on a consistent or regular basis. So while it's nice and on a 4-game slate like this, it's a great DFS option, a great DFS punt play, an interesting stream with Lowry out, but aside from that, once Kyle is back, then Friddles just moves back to being a guy who's a 16, maybe 18 team league guy. But it's impressive to see him do that. It was a career night for Fred VanVleet, so we remember that when we look at his numbers, that this sort of shooting, this sort of scoring is something that's never, ever happened in his career before. But he can nail the threes. Hasn't really done it at a totally elite level this year, 37%, which is great. But over the last 15 games, he's at 43%, and that's where a lot of his value is being derived. So Freddie VanVleet is your waiver wire line of the night. The dud of the night comes from the same game. I tell a man's not hot. Isaiah Thomas, 4 points, 2 rebounds, 3 assists, 1 block. He was 0 of 10 from the field in the first half, ended up 2 of 15. He is going to sit out Friday's game due to rest. It was not a good Isaiah Thomas game. He came back to begin the season and put together 2 strong games, 17 points in the first one, 19 in the next one. And then his next 2 games, 9 points on 11 shots and then 4 points on 15 shots. 2 absolutely horrendous performances. He is currently the 364th ranked player, and that's not on a total basis. That's on a per game basis. And I guess, yes, he is playing 21 minutes per game, but on a per 36 minute basis, so everyone normalized to the same playing time, he's at 305th. So things haven't gone well for him so far. And that's in large part because in those games, he's shooting 35% from the field. He's shooting 64% from the line and 26% from threes. Numbers which are significantly lower than what he did last year. We can expect all of those to come up pretty large quantities. Now is the time to go super aggressive on your buy lows to Isaiah Thomas. And you might say, Josh, these things don't pan out. What are you talking about? These offers aren't going to work. I should bring this up actually, because I want to make sure I've got it correct. People do ask me these questions and they debate them. These offers are out there. Isaiah Thomas versus Spencer Dinwiddie. That was one that I got asked. Do I take Isaiah or do I take Spencer? If you're sitting in a comfortable position, top 1, 2, 3, 4, I feel pretty good that Thomas is not going to be as good as last season. I've said that plenty of times. I also feel pretty bloody good that he's going to be a top 50 or top 40 guy. Whereas when D'Angelo Russell returns, then Dinwiddie takes somewhat of a hit. So I would take Thomas in that deal. I would be throwing out guys like Dazza Collison. I'd throw him around and see if he can get anything, any traction on a deal like that. Just throw someone low, because people see this and they go, oh man, not fitting the Cavs system, it's not right, hip's not right, he's going to be injured all season. But people have weird immediate reactions to things. And a lot of my thing is just don't panic, be patient, this will ramp up, and it will take time. Now, Thomas is not a guy that I drafted anyway, because I hate drafting guys that I know are going to be out for the first 3 months of the season, and then take them a month to get back, and all that sort of stuff. I know that, but when you can acquire them for nothing, or for very, very much close to nothing, it's especially if you are strong because you didn't draft him in the first place and you didn't have a wasted roster spot or make a wasted pick at pick 40 and didn't have your third round pick play for the first 3 months of the season, and you're sitting in first or second, you can afford for him to ramp up over the next 2 weeks. So yeah, pay attention to it, have a look at it, see if you can make that deal. Just inquire. There's nothing wrong with throwing that out there. Maybe it doesn't work out. And what you say, you don't necessarily go out there and throw out DeLon Wright for Isaiah Thomas. You go to the Isaiah Thomas owner and go, hey, I'm interested in Thomas. Anything you're interested in a trade? How about when you throw like 3 guys out there, a couple of just your worst 2 players, and then throw out someone who you'd be happy to give away and see how that works. It's not going to work for most of you, but in 10% of leagues, 5% of leagues, it will. It will work in some leagues, and I want to hear about it if you do happen to pull off what I would consider a buy low. But remember, make it a buy low. And someone asked me, oh, is Kevin Love for Isaiah Thomas a buy low? Not necessarily. Is Aaron Gordon? No, not really. Is Chris Dunn? Yeah, maybe, but maybe not. They could very easily finish in the same position. Dennis Schroeder? Not really. They aren't what I would consider buy low options. Caris LeVert? Yeah, sure. Definitely that's a buy low. Marquise Chris? Of course. De'Aaron Fox? Absolutely. But be careful of what you consider a buy low. Might not be what I consider. And hey, maybe I'm wrong. But what I consider a buy low might be different to what you consider a buy low deal. All right, let's get into question time for today's show. And today's question comes from Weston Auburn, who's on Twitter at Weston Auburn. He says, who are the least fantasy-friendly coaches in the NBA, and do you avoid drafting players for those teams? Now, I don't like having blanket rules for things. I've been pretty clear about that through my 5 years doing this podcast. That blanket rules, they don't serve any benefit. Who's on your do not draft list? Nobody. Nobody's on my do not draft list, because if Isaiah Thomas failed to pick 150, I would have taken him there. But picking him at pick 30, then I would never grab him. You know, having this do not draft list or this do not drafts or draft him last year, man, he's killed me, burnt me. No, never doing it again. Like, having that mentality, it does screw you. And also having this, like, never drafting anyone from the Spurs. Cool, Kawhi sits there at 20. You're not gonna do it. LaMarcus Aldridge falls to 75. You're gonna let that pass as well? No, he's on the Spurs, man. Pop, rest guys. Yeah, so does everyone else. Really? Yeah. How many games has LaMarcus Aldridge rested this year? One. I think I could be wrong. I think he's rested one, maybe two games. But the worst coach, fantasy friendly wise, is Dave Yeager and the Sacramento Kings. And so much of fantasy ties in with real life stuff more than what people who don't play fantasy would like to admit. Dave Yeager is one of the worst coaches in the NBA. He runs the team that has got one of the worst offenses in the NBA and one of the worst defenses in the NBA. The team with the least stable rotation. The team with the most inept offense that does not fit the talent around it. The team whose defense is deplorable for the majority of the time. The team that is trying to foster young talent and plays 25 minutes of Vince Carter 3 games in a row and then inexplicably DMPs guys or moves them in and out of the rotation. So in general, you know, frustration with NBA coaches is frustration in fantasy. So Dave Yeager is definitely one of those guys. In the past, we've had issues with Earl Watson in Phoenix, Jay Triano doing a little bit of that. But look, some of his stuff is maddening, but at least there's a decent pattern happening with it at the moment, and we can understand what's going on the majority of the time. But there's no one where I go, okay, I don't think I drafted any Kings guys really in any leagues apart from maybe a Bogdanovich in a 14-team league this year. And I drafted Cauley Stein in the 30-deep league. But at the appropriate spot, I think I got Will at like pick 130 or something along those lines. So I don't look at them and go, man, never drafting these guys. I draft them because I go through, obviously, and project the projections, which is a horrible use of English. But I go through and look at these projections and do it for all of these teams and all of these players and do how I think all these guys are going to play for the season, minutes-wise, games-wise, numbers all across the board. I do all that. So when I look at it, I go, I have factored everything in. I've factored in game style. I've factored in pace of the coach. I've factored in teammates and how that's going to work, positions played. That's all factored in, and I guess that's all part of the coaches. And when we look at it, yeah, at the start of the season, we talked about it, the Kings had by far the worst fantasy-looking squad because we didn't know how the minutes were going to go. There was going to be splits all over the place. There was going to be weird rotations and players that weren't very good. And that's the way that it's panned out at the moment with, you know, their best player at the moment for fantasy. It's probably George Hill, is it? But not, is no one in the top 50. And there's no one even getting close to the top 50. And that's the way it looks out. So there's no one who I look at and go, yeah, absolutely never drafting someone from that team based on the coach. But at the moment, Yeager is not a great one. I do not get caught up with Popovich and don't draft Spurs ever because rests and all this stuff. Like, don't draft Tony Parker because he's Tony Parker and he's going to play 24 minutes a night. Don't draft Manu Ginobili because he's going to play 18 minutes a night and he's going to rest every game because he's 40 years old. Like, we know that. Don't draft Pau Gasol in the top 50 because he's just not going to give you that level of production. These are all things that we know. These are not unexpected things. And it's the unexpected, unexplainable things that really get to me. And that's what bothers me a lot with the Kings and Yeager. Let's get into these games now. There was four of them on Thursday. I had to get my numbers right there. The first one of them was in Boston. No, it wasn't in Boston. It was in London. And it was the Boston Celtics taking on the Philadelphia 76ers. Marcus Morris came off the bench, as we predicted. to play 24 minutes, 19 and 8 with 3 triples for Morris, 2 assists and a steal. That's a very, very nice performance from Morris. It's not anything where I need to go and grab him in 12-team leagues, but it is a strong game. And Marcus Morris is a shit bloke. He's not a good bloke at all. You can go through his bitching, his whinging, his texts, his issues in Phoenix, his arrests for bashing someone who smashed his mum. Yeah, he's not a good bloke, right? And so, there was that incident between him and Ben Simmons. And I've got to explain. I didn't want to get into it with everyone on Twitter all the time because it's hard in the written word. But here's my thoughts on it. And you're all going to disagree with me. Plenty of you are going to disagree with me. But what happened is, if you didn't see it, Morris tried to set a screen. Simmons ran into him and knocked him down and hit him hard and knocked him and smashed him straight down the middle hard with his shoulder, banged straight into him as Morris tried to set the screen. Morris gets up as Simmons is standing there and runs at him and pushes him and tries to start something. Like all right, tough guy. Now, I know that Morris is probably a tough guy and he's someone you probably don't want to mess with that much. Simmons is pretty strong. Simmons did not like take any step back. But my issue is when I tweeted out, Marcus Morris shit bloke, Simmons is a shit bloke. No. Because I tell you what happened. Marcus Morris tried to set a screen, and we see it all the time. Steven Adams sets a screen, Marcin Gortat sets a screen, Dwight Howard sets a screen. They set these screens. We've seen it with lots of guys. I think it was someone set one on Paul George in a game against the Timberwolves mid-season. They stand there and they try and hit the shit out of the person they're screening. They get in their way and they stand there. They tuck their arm in and they lay their shoulder in and they try and crunch them. And Morris was standing there setting the screen. And if he had to put Simmons on his ass from the screen, everybody would have been, oh, look at this screen, man. What a great screen. Really, really smashed him. Really made him feel that screen. The problem is he went to set the screen and Simmons said, well, bad luck, I'm running straight through it. And that's exactly what happened. Morris didn't stand up to it, didn't knock Simmons down. Simmons saw it coming and lowered the shoulder in. I got no problem with it. And it's just not anything. To me, it's like this is you pushing through a screen. Morris is just trying to get in your way and you knocked him out of the way. Simple as that. And Morris gets all pissy about it. Again, if he had have sat Simmons on his ass with the screen, no one would have had a problem with it. But now he's getting up and acting like a real tough bastard. But anyway, but he did have some. Look, he was fine about. Like, I don't really have too much of an issue with Morris in this instance. He got heated. I got really no problem with him doing that. And he was fine with his comments after the game, all that sort of stuff. But yeah, I saw absolutely nothing wrong with what Simmons did. Surely that's just what you do when someone's there trying to put you on the ground. Then if you can do the same to them, you do it. Okay, enough talk about that. Al Horford 13-8-7. Yeah, just it continues to be rock solid. Well, Jaylen Brown, at this point, you're punting free throws with Jaylen Brown. There's no two ways about it. He was 3 of 5 from the line. He had 21, 4 and 2, 3 steals. That's nice. But the free throws, man, you just can't get out of them. Like, he's just continually a shit free throw shooter. Kyrie had 26 and 7. Well, Marcus Smart, only 5 points and 2 assists and 3 steals and only played 23 minutes. Wasn't the greatest Marcus Smart performance. In 10-team leagues, you probably don't need to hold on to him. I'd still hold in a lot of 12-teamers, but he hasn't taken a step forward as I would have hoped he had have. And if there are other guys out there, I can consider moving on in those cases. Terry Rozier, 8-4 in 21 minutes. And again, with everyone healthy, it's just hard to see him getting enough playing time to really execute enough value. Jason Tatum, 24 minutes, 16-4-2. 1 of 3 from 3, the 3-point percentage continues to tumble. Shout out to Jalen Rose, who thought that he would be able to continue shooting at 47%. Good on you, Jalen. The Philadelphia 76ers, JJ Redick, 22-7 with 5 triples, 3 assists and a block. Another strong game, while Simo had 16-2-3, 2 steals, 2 blocks. Has not attempted a single 3-pointer this season. He has had 10 3-point attempts. All of those have been end-of-the-quarter shots. There was 8 of them have been from the backcourt and 2 of them in the frontcourt, but hasn't attempted a single 3-pointer, hasn't hit one. And do you reckon? I don't think he'll hit one at all this season. I don't even know if he'll attempt a 3-pointer that's not an end of the shot clocks type situation. But it doesn't matter because the numbers are still there without the 3-point shot. McConnell had 12, 4, and 5 with 3 steals, getting some numbers there. But Markel Fultz, even though the jumper still looks just, I don't even know what's going on with that. But he is going to return, looks like at some point soon. And that's going to cut into McConnell's playing time a little bit. Šarić had 14, 4, and 3. And Embiid had 15, 10, and 5 with 2 steals. And a block. No Amir Johnson to Rashawn Holmes got the backup minutes. 2 and 4 for Holmes in 17 minutes. I think we're all well aware that there's no point in owning him in 12-team leagues, but numerous people going with the questions at me for Bob Cup. Man, do I still hold him? Yes, you do. Yes, his numbers have really shrunk recently. He had 5 points in 30 minutes. I'm not all that worried. Obviously, the numbers at the start of the season, the shooting numbers, they weren't going to continue at that level, but they'll bounce back. He'll get his steals back. I'm not overly concerned about Covington. He's definitely not someone that I'm even considering dropping. Cleveland and Toronto. Really, this is just an absolute ass-kicking for this game. 26-3-1 for LeBron. One assist, one steal and two blocks in 32 minutes. Kevin Love, 23 minutes, 10-9. He had 4 shots in each half. I am super worried about the usage for him with Thomas around. Now, hard to read too much into this game and the last game where they got their pants pulled down by the Timberwolves. But it hasn't been encouraging. We'll put it that way. Not that we're worrying, but it hasn't been encouraging because... Yeah, I would have hoped he could do something. Thomas hasn't been good these last two games, but Thomas took 15 shots in 25 minutes. It's just too much. And I don't know, there's a significant problem with this team just at the moment. And I'm not saying it's something that can't get figured out, but they've got to figure out how to work with Love and with Thomas. And Thomas just can't be jacking these shots as much as he is. I don't believe anyway. I think you've got to involve Kevin Love. You just have to. And that is why I was kept saying, sell high, sell high, sell high. You can't do that now. But let's see how it all pans out for him. J.R. Smith continues to be terrible. 0 points in 27 minutes for Smitty. The plumber. On to the Raptors. Jakob Poeltl, who played under 10 minutes for the previous two games. Well, he played 26. Of course he did. 12-12 with 3 blocks. He looked really good. But predicting what's going to happen with those center rotation minutes, impossible. No idea. Is it going to be Poeltl, who was playing well and then inexplicably played 8 minutes a game for two games? And then this one, Jonas Valanciunas had 9-9 in the first quarter, ended with 15-18, and played 19 minutes. Without Serge Ibaka, nothing makes sense with the way that they run their rotation, so it is quite a hard one. Now, I like Poeltl quite a bit for dynasty stuff. I think he is going to have some top 100 seasons coming up next season, maybe the year after, but there is still so much uncertainty with how they do it. No Lowry, no Ibaka, so CJ Miles started, and then Jedi OG Anunoby moved across to power forward. He actually blocked a shot, which is something that we've been really waiting for him to do this season. Blocked tons of shots in college and hasn't really been able to do it, and if he can start doing that on a regular basis, that is going to be really interesting and really useful for his fantasy value. DeMar DeRozan, not a great game from DeRozan, 13-3-8. Well, Norm Powell out of nowhere, 14-6-3 in his 27 minutes. As for DeLon Wright, 6-2-4, still had 2 blocks and only played the 18 minutes. If I picked him up, I'm definitely not dropping him after this game. The next game we look at, the LA Clippers and the Sacramento Kings. Blake Griffin was back. Miloš Teodosic was back. Blake, 18-12-6 in 33 minutes. Miloš, 10-1-9 with 2 triples. Those 9 assists are exactly why I think Miloš does have value in standard leagues and why I think you should be looking to grab him if he is around. Interestingly, even with Miloš back, Ty Wallace moved into the starting lineup. He's a point guard. He started at small forward, played 37 minutes, had 8-3-2 with 2 steals and a block. So obviously unable to score the way he did in that game yesterday because Blake's back and Miloš is back. But getting stuff done in those other numbers and played 37 minutes. And until Austin Rivers returns and we get some more updates on CJ Williams, the list manager Ty Wallace is going to have some value in 14-team leagues, and definitely I would consider it in 12-teamers. Wes Johnson had 13 points with 3 triples. Yeah, not really too much to like about him. Lou Williams, 30-6 with 5 triples. Another strong game from Lou. But DeAndre Jordan, the Iron Man, hurt his ankle, was not able to return in the second half, 11 minutes. Now, he did go out there, warm up, try to play, but who knows what that means. We've seen weird stuff from the Clippers plenty of times. Guys that we don't think are hurt for long go out for weeks, like Gallinari, like Rivers, or players that we think are going to be out longer, like Blakey, and then he's back straight away. So it is really hard to tell with their medical staff at the moment. And DeAndre Jordan's one of those guys, again, with the Iron Man reputation, that when you get that reputation, it seems to stick. Like Damian Lillard, who's now missed 8 or 9 games for 3 consecutive seasons, yet is still bandied about as being an Iron Man. And you're an Iron Man until you're not, as I always say, and you're injury prone until you're not. Yeah, so drafting, making draft decisions based on the past history of a guy not missing many games, it doesn't guarantee that that's going to happen. You know what? Karl Anthony Towns has yet to miss a game in his NBA career. Russell Westbrook was the same. Damian Lillard was the same. And they miss games. I'm not wishing anything bad on Karl Anthony Towns, but he's going to miss games. And I don't know if Jordan's going to miss any time here. Will Reed started the second half, and the table Montrezl Harrell put up some really strong numbers after DeAndre went down. But I'm more just talking about DeAndre here. And I'm not really rushing to grab Harrell or Reed based on this injury. We'll find out some more things in the coming days. Juwan Evans moved back to the bench, 4 points, two assists and two blocks for Juwan, with Ty Wallace taking more of those minutes. Remember, Wallace is on a two-way deal, though, so he might only have a few weeks left with this team. On to the Kings. George Hill returned, 35 minutes, 21-3-3, two steals and a block. He is fine to go and own, but there's going to be discrepancies in his performance from game to game. While De'Aaron Fox still got 29 minutes, but that's a drop from what he'd been doing without Georgie, and the production dipped as well. 8 points, six assists and three steals. He is fine to own in 12-team leagues, but I wouldn't label him a must-own. Whereas the guy that I want on this team, it's Bogdan. BB8 played 31 minutes. He had 22 points, four triples, four rebounds, two assists. He is the best player on this team. I will continue to say it. And he is owned in only 15% of Yahoo leagues. It needs to be more. Corley Stein, 12 and 7. Only 23 minutes for Will, while Zebo had 16 and 7, and Labissiere 8 and 4, and he's 21. And Garrett Temple back starting and played 17 minutes. I just absolutely don't have any idea what the point of Garrett Temple starting is. He's not as good a defender as what he used to be. He provides nothing offensively. I don't understand it. Costa Koufos with a weird double-double, 14 and 14 in 25 minutes, but really hard to see any value for Costa outside of the deeper formats. The last game, another just real blowout-y sort of performance. The Spurs and the Lakers. The Spurs were without Gay, Parker, Kawhi, and Dan Green. So DeJounte Murray started, 14, 11 and 5, three steals and a block. That is fantastic. We know it's not going to have a big impact this season because, you know, Parker's going to be back more than likely for the next game and Mills is still around, but Murray has this really high dynasty ceiling because his rebounds at a super high rate. He can get assists, he can get steals, he can block shots. We just need him to really start to be able to turn that shot on. He was 50% on 14 attempts here, which is obviously really good, but if he can't hit the shot, it does limit him. But he is a player who's got the fantasy skill set to become a comfortable top 40 guy at some point in the next couple of seasons. Powell had 9, 12, and 5 with 3 blocks. Always does well against the Lakers. Played 37 minutes, while Bryn had 18 points. Bryn Forbes, that is, 4 triples and 2 steals. Probably his best performance in replacing Dan Green. He's just as likely to have 6 points in the next one. Aldridge, 20 and 4 in 35 minutes for LaMarcus, while Kyle Anderson had just 6 and 7 in 29 minutes. And while Kawhi is out, Anderson might seem like this great must-own guy, but to me, if you look at it honestly, he's your worst guy on your roster in a 12-team league, most likely. So you're better off just holding him and grabbing someone else when the opportunity arises, streaming through that position. He just has very limited upside. Davis Bertans, only 2 points in 17 minutes. On to the Lakers. Larry Nance Jr. played 30 minutes, 14 and 10, two steals and a block. So his big minutes meant that Julius Randle only played 18. A little bit disappointing there for Randle, who'd been putting up some good numbers. He went scoreless on 6 shots with 6 rebounds. Still holding him, and I'm not making any jumping sort of moves to go and grab Nance. KCP, 10 points with 5 steals. Those 5 steals are nice, but he's just not consistent enough to be considered a must-own 10-team league guy, but he is an interesting 12-team guy. Ingram had 26, Kuzma, the future MVP, 10, 6, and 4 with 2 steals. So at least he was able to contribute in other categories when the shots weren't falling, but he has clearly dropped off to a considerable level. While my man Jordan Clarkson, 14 minutes, 5 points, 3 rebounds, 2 assists, a steal, owned in 60% of leagues somehow, and then Bogdanovich is owned in 15. That is absolutely laughable. Clarkson is not a 10, he is not a 12, he is barely a 14-team league guy at the moment. A shout-out to Brook Lopez being owned in 83% of leagues. He had 4 points in 18 minutes, and the minutes just aren't changing for Brook. You can talk about, you know, him getting traded. There is absolutely zero incentive for the Lakers to trade him unless it's to get themselves Paul George, which is not going to happen. There is zero incentive for them to trade Brook Lopez. He's an expiring big-money contract that frees up cap space for next season. He's not going anywhere. I would be absolutely floored if the Lakers made a move to get rid of Brook Lopez. So expect more of this for the rest of the season. All right. That is going to do us for the recap of Thursday's action. I'm going to take a quick break, and then we're going to come back and we're going to look at the player spotlight casted over an injured star. And then we're going to look at DFS for Friday, where there are 9 games on. I'm going to give you a song today by Big School, and the song is called You Always. And then we'll be back to do DFS for Friday. right, guys, we're back. Lots of people have been asking me to put this player under the player spotlight, and that player is, of course, Memphis Grizzlies point guard Mike Conley, who we have not seen since, when's the last time we saw him play? The 13th of November, with that Achilles problem that flared up. The last time he had that issue was back at the end of the 2015-16 season. We haven't seen him for a while. The updates have been scarce. We got one recently saying he's doing some 3-on-3 work, so obviously he's got to progress to 4-on-4, he's got to progress to 5-on-5, and all that sort of stuff. So we're talking a few weeks away here at least. My guess, and it's based on nothing, it's based on me guessing, of course, is saying that I don't think he's going to be back before the All-Star break. So we're talking about a month. He could come back maybe a week before. I wouldn't be surprised there, but I think that's the sort of expectation we should have for Conley. Now, before the injury, he was struggling. Now, some of it has to be to do with the injury. I'm convinced there was some portion of that, because if we look at his numbers for this season, in the 12 games that he played, he shot 38% from the field. And a common thing with lower body injuries is it impacts your shooting. He was a 46% shooter last year and shot 41% from three. He's at 38 and 31 this year, a tumble of 8% in his true shooting. So a big, big drop off there. The other issue we had with Conley's numbers this season was the fact that he wasn't dishing assists, because Tyreek Evans was handling the ball a lot more. His assists went from 6.3 per game, when he was at 6 per game, or around 6 per game for the last four seasons. He went to only 4.1 so far this season. So a change in the way the Grizzlies have played with Tyreek there. Now, if Tyreek happens to move out at the trade deadline, which I'm not 100% sure that he will, but there's a very good chance that he does, then that could open things up more in that second half of the season for Conley. But I reckon by far the most common question I've gotten over the last 3 weeks, 4 weeks, is do I drop Conley? And it's not as simple as that. There are many different ways to do it. Obviously, if you've got an IR spot, then you don't drop him. You just keep him in IR and you leave him there. That's simple. That's straightforward. But without IR, it really depends. Are you languishing? Are you in sixth spot? Are you in seventh spot? You might not have to drop him, but trade him. Get something back. Get another team's 12th best player back. Get their 11th best player. Get something back, because if you're waiting another 3 weeks, that could mean another three to six losses, and it could put you completely out of the playoff picture. We're in a situation here where fantasy playoffs are 4 to 6 weeks away, depending on when your league is. Maybe 7 weeks, depending. Yeah, we're not that far away. So can you catch up? Like, if he misses the next 3 weeks and then you've got three more weeks until your playoffs start, can you catch up in that time? Are you going to be in the playoffs? If you're fairly comfortably in the playoffs and you've been winning without him, then you just keep him, and you just keep rolling. And if you drop from first to second, it doesn't really matter. But if you're in that 5 to 6 zone, you've got to start to look to you know, whether you do trade him. And if you don't, you know, do you drop him? And do you then try and get yourself from losing 3 to 6 each week to being 5 to 4 victors or 6 to 3 victors by getting an active player in or by streaming that spot? Now, if your team's not good enough anyway, and you're not, you might get yourself an extra one category over 3 weeks, then is it really worth it? Probably not. But it's a very individual question. I do always recommend playing in leagues with IR spots. I do like the IR spot. No one likes to have this situation where their team is just completely filled up with injuries and you have to drop stars to the bench, because all it does is it creates an inequity in the league, because it means the better teams just get better, because then they're in a good spot and they can just drop someone and afford to stash them, and then come, you know, 3 weeks later down the track, they get stronger and stronger. And you could say, oh, that's the advantage they get for being good at the start of the year. Oh, that's fine. I just like having an IR spot. I don't like situations where you have like 5 or 6 IR spots. I think that's definitely overkill. But I do worry a bit about Conley. Now, I was pretty excited about him heading into this season. I thought he was a strong chance for a top 25 spot based on what we saw from him last season. I thought he'd have to take on an extra step of responsibility, you know, really run things with his team and develop into a true star on this team. But I didn't anticipate Evans coming in and having the impact he did. I didn't anticipate Conley having this injury, of course. So it's been disappointing, and I don't think he's getting back to that level that I projected him for at the beginning of the season. I think we're looking at a guy who, like Paul Millsap, that you may have valued as a third round guy, that now you have to consider as a top 70, a top 80 type of a player. That's the sort of value you should be assigning him, I think, at this point. It hasn't been a good thing for him this year. But look, again, he has been a positive for this team in the games that he's played. He has a plus 3.8. He's been a positive for every year of his NBA career, apart from the first two. So that's a sign of a player who's still doing stuff that is positive. Now, his other advanced metrics aren't great. His box score plus minus is putrid. His win shares per 48 are down. His PER was 23 last year. It's down at 16. The true shooting, as I mentioned, has dropped by 8%. So we're seeing those big drop-offs in shooting percentages, three-point percentage, and the other numbers that he's putting up, his assist rate and all that sort of stuff, you know, well down. He went from a 34.5% assist rate to 22.9 as Evans is getting more of those numbers. So I would expect similar numbers along those lines to continue, but in terms of his percentages, I think that they can come back on strong. And if he has a top 50 post All-Star, I wouldn't be shocked, but I also wouldn't be expecting it. As for the future for Conley, he's 30 this season. So he's going to be 31 next year. So a decline is coming. If this isn't already the decline. Now, I think he can be better than this, especially if Tyreek isn't there next season. We'll see his assist rate go up, but I reckon we might start to see at the age of 31, the percentages drop on a permanent basis, and they might be better than what they currently are, but they won't be as good as what they were in his age 29 season. So I would expect a decline, and then he moves from being that guy who's a top 30 type option to being a player who's then a top 60 option or a top 70 option for the next 2 to 3 seasons after that. So that's the way I think you should be looking at him and valuing him in dynasty leagues. But I don't think that we have seen the last of Conley this season. I don't think that he is going to get traded. I think he'll be back in February. I think he will come back and he will ease into it slowly, but I also think that he will get back and play 30 minutes a night by the time we get into late February and then roll through those low to mid 30s throughout March. I think that's what will happen. That's my prediction on it at this point, but there's so much up in the air with Mick at this point, it is hard to get a full read on it. Let's look now at the perfect DFS lineups. On FanDuel, DeJounte Murray, 45.7, and Lonzo Ball, 46. Big games from the young point guards. Redick, 34.9, and Lou Williams, 45. Big games from the old Clippers shooting guards. Jaylen Brown, and I'm aware that Redick does not play for the Clippers anymore. Jaylen Brown, 35.8, and LeBron James, 38.1.
LeBron James.
Marcus Morris, 34.6, Blakey Griffin, 40.4, and Kostas Koufos, 40.3, for a total of 360.8, and that cost $59,800 on DraftKings. Lonzo had 48.5 and Lou Will 46. Ingram 36.75, Griffin 44.5, Valanciunas 39, DeJounte Murray 44.25, Gasol, Powell 36.5, and Koufos at 40 for a total of 335.5, and that cost $49,800 dollary dues. Someone tweeted me today and says, mate, you saying dollary dues has entered my general vocabulary. Thank you for that. It makes me laugh every time. And just to make sure, like, I didn't invent dollary dues. If you haven't seen it, it's from the Simpsons versus Australia episode. Go and check that. It's the Simpsons horrible, horrible, horrible Australian accents and doing that, talking about the phone bill for when Bart calls that kid. I wish I could remember that kid's name that he calls down in Australia, and that guy puts on that horrible. I'm going to see if I can imitate an American doing an Australian accent. $900 dollary dues. Even that sounds more accurate than what that guy's accent is, but that's where it's from. It's not me inventing the dollary do, so I'm not taking full credit for that. I'll take full credit for introducing it into the fantasy basketball lexicon, but not for the actual invention of the phrase. That is all Matt Groening and the writers over at The Simpsons. Let's talk DFS for Friday. The first game that we're going to take a look at is the Orlando Magic, a team that is just putrid, this team at the moment, taking on the Washington Wizards. The Wizards favored by 10.5, and the total is 218 points. At point guard, Lord Alfred Payton, 6,700, has played under 30 minutes, under 25 minutes, actually, in the past two games. His production has been well down. He has got a stellar record against Washington. The price has tumbled to 6,700. Now, the matchup looks shit on the surface, but the last three games, he is averaging 48. That is a huge amount. And that comes against John Wall, who is a very good point guard defender. I'm not saying that I'm getting on Lord Alfred as a cash play, but if there's an opportunity for him to turn it around, I'm interested here. I'm interested for GPPs because it could be a extraordinarily low ownership type situation that turns out very well for you. As for Johnny Wall, we have seen point guards just abuse the Magic consistently. He is at 10,300, which is a pretty big price jump, but he dropped 63 in the last game, and a 50 burger here out of John Wall. You go, yeah, that makes sense. Yeah, we see what guards do against the Magic, and they've done against the Magic most of the season. This has absolutely got 50-point potential for John. DJ Augustin had a good game a couple of games ago, but I don't really see too much there. At shooting guard, Bradles Beal, 8,500. Yeah, I think that's fine as well. It's a great matchup for him against the Wizards too. I guess the thing I don't mention enough is that shooting guards against the Wizards, they also put up big numbers. So this is a 50-point opportunity also for Beal, probably more likely as a 45, but that's absolutely fine at 8,500. So using those two guys together, I think it's fine. It's a good cash option, and it is a good tournament play as well. Fournier is down to 5,500. He exceeded that value in the last game. Hadn't really sniffed getting close to that prior to that, but I love the fact that that salary has tumbled as much as it has. I still don't think that he's really reliable for cash games just yet. At small forward, Oubre, at 4,100, that's a pass from me. Otto Porter up to 7,100. Fans will just get sick on Otto Porter. They just go, all right, we're just going to bump your price up, even though his last game he had under 30 points. Like, oh, cool, well, now you're worth over 7,000. And the answer to that is, no, he's probably not. Now, he did have a 51-point game in the last five. That's fine, but including that, he averages 29 over his last five games, which just is not good enough for that salary. No way. John Simmons, you know, he's bad. 4,500 for John. He is barely playing minutes. Some of that may be his back. Some of that may be the fact the team is getting killed. Some of that may be he is the reason the team are getting killed. At 4,500, I just don't like his upside with everyone else around. While Hezonja at 4,500, well, he's been putting up the numbers, either replacing Gordon, replacing Simo. He's averaging 23 points over the last five games, which at 4,500, it's actually enough. I don't think he's going to get there, so he's probably not a high enough ceiling guy for tournament or a high enough floor for cash. Azar Gordon, 7,100, just really atrocious in his shooting lately. At some point, it's going to turn around, but I'm not fully ready to go with him in cash. I think he's a tournament guy, but I do like him for GPPs here. Markieff's at 5,000, terrible in his last outing, but had been strong before that. I don't mind using him for cash. 5,000 is not a high amount. Mike Scott, no. Center, Bismack Biyombo, 5,500. Actually got the value in the last game, but had been poor prior to that. I don't really feel super excited about him, nor do I with Gortat at 45. Although Gortat at 45 has got that 30 to 35 point upside, which would make him an interesting tournament guy. But really, when we talk interesting, I don't think that's exactly what I want. On DraftKings, I like Wall, I like Beal, 94 and 8,000 for both of them. You know, strong positions for both of them. Azar Gordon at 77 has some value. On Otto Porter, this is a much better spot for Porter, $6,000. I could understand the rationale behind using him in cash. I probably wouldn't on DraftKings, but he's definitely more in the calculations. Same story for Payton. He is a GPP guy, as he was on FanDuel, and nothing else really stands out in terms of differentials on DraftKings versus FanDuel. Let's go on to the next game. It's the Cleveland Cavaliers backing up on a back-to-back against the Pacers. The Cavs are favored by 1.5. The total is 222 points here. Actually,
2 for 2, 2, 2.
Thanks, Rich. No Isaiah Thomas. He's going to be out resting in this game. So we're going to get Jose Calderon going up against Daz Collison. Collison's at $5,000. I feel good about him getting me 20. Is that enough at 5,000? No. Can he get you 30? Absolutely. And it is the Cavs' backcourt. Now, of recent times, they've been a little bit better in restricting point guards. Not that much. And he has got legitimate 45-point upside here, Dazza. So I do think that he's a tournament guy. And I wouldn't be hating on using him in cash. Corey Joseph at 4,200. They've been splitting the minutes a bit with Daz, which takes some of that reliability away from Collison. But Joseph's just not a high-reliability guy himself. At shooting guard, Kyle Korver, Dwayne Wade. I don't really see much appeal in either of them. Well, Vic Oladipo, it's a high price, man. 9,500 for Vic. But he does well against the Cavs. He's doing well pretty much every time out there. You can almost guarantee a 40 out of Vic. I'm fine with using him here. Again, the Cavs' backcourt gives an opportunity for a comfortable 40 for Oladipo with the ability to go for more. The plumber, nah, no chance for him either. At small forward, it is
LeBron James.
He's at 11,500. He has had two subpar performances in a row and still averages 48 over his last five games. He's at 11,500, so I'm ready to get back on. He's got a massive, massive record against the Pacers, averages 67 against them the last three times out. We're talking 90-point upside for LeBron. I think people will fade him after the last couple of performances. I don't think the sharp people will fade him. I think they'll be looking to get back on board, but I think we could see a 35-point triple-double here for LeBron. I think we're in big-time territory. Boyan is not really ever a DFS option. Lance at 5,000, not happening. At power forward, Domantas Sabonis, he's going to start at center in place of Miles Turner. 7,100, FanDuel's just gone, you want to use Sabonis? Nah, man, not happening. 7,100 is a $1,200 increase. He only had 22 points in the last game in 31 minutes. I do think that he is okay to use in this matchup against the Cavs, which is a positive one for him, but I'm not fully invested in him as a cash play at that price. At 6,000, sure, all over it for cash. At 7,100, I'd probably leave it for a tournament spot. Thaddeus Young at 59, well, he doesn't have to share those minutes with Sabonis anymore. There is TJ Leaf around, but he turned it around in the last game with Turner out, had 29 points in 29 minutes, and at 5,900, I think he's got 35-point upside, 40-point upside here, Thad. He's got a very good record against Cleveland himself. Jeff Green, Jay Crowder. Crowder just does just nothing, and Green, hitching your wagon to Green's not a great DFS strategy. Kevin Love's at 7,100. He is going to have absolutely no ownership, so that's why he is an interesting GPP guy. We know he can go off. He can drop 30 FanDuel points in a single quarter. He can also get frozen out by Ty Lue and take two shots in a half. So it's the extremes, and that's why we're not going that way for cash, while Tristan Thompson just is not a good fantasy player at all. On DraftKings, a lot more tournament-type options here on DraftKings. LeBron at 11.5, probably a little bit too high to fully load up in cash, but it's not bad. Vic Oladipo at 9,000, he can go cash there as well. Sabonis at 64, way more interesting than on FanDuel at that price. It's still an increase, but not to the degree of what we saw on FanDuel. At 6,400, there is some value, and I would use him in cash. Thaddeus is at 54, again, similar to FanDuel, while Daz Collison at 49, I'm in on using him for cash as well. So there are quite a few options that you can use on both sides for this game. Next up, we're going to Charlotte for the Utah Jazz to take on the Charlotte Hornets. The Hornets are favored by 4, the total is 207.5. Rocket Rodney Hood was ejected in the last game. We've heard no word of a suspension, so I have to assume that he's going to play. Well, Derek Favors missed that last game with an ankle sprain. He's been upgraded to probable, so hopefully he is ready to go. That obviously takes away a lot of the Epe Udo value. Now, if Favors is out, Udo saw his price rise to 4,800. He had 48 in the last game, so 4,800 at that price doesn't matter. That's perfect. But as I detailed on yesterday's show, or maybe the day before show, expecting that level out of Udo, it's foolish. Like, he's just not going to be able to score at that level. He's not going to take those shots. He's not going to be able to put all that together on a consistent basis. So at 4,800, he's not as much of a lock cash guy as what he was. Kemba Walker at 8,500. We love what Kemba's doing recently, but the matchup for him going up against Dallas versus going up against Utah defensively is a big story. Now, Utah is sort of middle of the pack in terms of point guard defense, but 8,500 for Kemba probably takes him out of my cash considerations. Ravishing Rick Rubio, 5,100. He's averaging 31 over his last five. The numbers have been up for Rubio. He had 34 in his last game. He's done well against Kemba and the Hornets in the past. I don't hate this for cash. I think there's some tournament upside, but the way that he's playing has been improved. And we're seeing Alec Burks be removed from the rotation and Rubio getting a little bit more consistent run. So 5,100, not a horrible move. Michael Carter-Williams, though, would be. Rocket, 4,900. The shot is not falling, but when it does, he will beat that number. So that puts him into a GPP-type scenario. He'll also be very, very lowly owned. While the Don Mitchell, 7,100. The shot not falling is a problem for him, but it didn't fall in the last game. And he still put up 32, so that makes him a pretty decently safe floor guy with 50-point upside. So I do like the Don here. Batum at 5,300 is just not even really sniffing that number. It is getting appealing as such a big drop to under 5,500, so that is giving me something, and I'd maybe consider it in tournaments. Well, Jezza Lamb at 48, just limited upside and low floor is just not a good combo. Small forward Tarbo, 30 minutes, 5 minutes, I don't know. I have no idea what they're going to do at power forward. I can't even judge it based on matchups, because sometimes against big lineups he doesn't play, sometimes against big lineups he does play. Now the Hornets are going to be starting Marvin Williams and Dwight Howard. What does Marvin Williams can? Is that a good matchup for Tarbo? Or does that mean we'll get Joe Johnson out there? Or will we get Jonas Jerebko? Literally have no idea how the Jazz are going to run that. So that's a tough sell for Tarbo. Jingling Joe's at 48, absolutely zero upside, but a very, very safe floor, and that can have some value in cash, as we know. Kid Gilchrist, Joe Johnson, I have no interest in them, even though Joey did go off in that last game, but you can put him in that Tarbo Cephalosha bucket. Frank the Tank's at 4,600. Some real piss-poor performances lately from Kaminsky, averaging just 15 over the last 3. 46 is not a good price. While Favors at 6,000, I think that there is limited upside in Favors, but I also think he's got a strong floor, so he is an okay cash guy if we hear that he's playing. Marv Williams is almost at minimum salary. He had 29 minutes in the last game and put up 17 points. He's at 3,600, but there are going to be better options around. While at center, Dwight, 8,800 for Dwight. I like Dwight. I love what he's done this season. I don't think spending almost $9,000 on Howard on a 9-game slate is necessarily the best way of using your salary cap. I talked about Epe Udo already and what we can consider with him. If Favors happens to be out on DraftKings, there's a few cash options I like. Now, Dwight at 73 on DraftKings is super. I really, really like that. Kemba at 76 is also strong, as is the Don at 7,000. All very strong cash and tournament plays. Favors at 63, not really that keen. Rocket, Rodney Hood's a GPP type of guy. Jingling Joe at 48, not as high a level of appeal as what I would have for him over on FanDuel. While Ravishing Rick is priced higher than on FanDuel, so that does take away some of that value that I was talking about. Udo at 4,200, I'd feel more comfortable about using him if Favors is out than I would over on FanDuel. Let's go on to the next one. Brooklyn Nets, Atlanta Hawks. The Hawks are favored by 3.5. The total is 211. We're hearing word come out, and I think it's relatively decent word. It makes sense that Marco Bellinelli and Ersan Ilyasova are available for an early second round pick, which is not very much at all. You could very comfortably see those guys moving. I don't think it's going to happen now, but it's something to pay attention to in the future. And it's also something for seasonal fantasy players when you're talking about the value of the Baptist John Collins. Once Ersan's gone, man, it's all over. Because I do believe then the Baptist is going to be getting his 25 to 26 and really smashing through that top 75 number. As for this game at point guard, Nets, point guards, let's load up. Dennis Schroeder, 7,400. You feel like getting 35 out of him is almost a guarantee here, and there's comfortable 45-point upside for Schroeder, so I like him for cash. I like the tournament there as well. While Spencer Dinwiddie, just horrendous in the last game. This is a little bit more of a better matchup, 6,700 for Spence. I'd be happy to get back onto him, but I think there are better point guard options out there on the slate. Malcolm Delaney, who's seen his minutes rise recently, he's at 4,100. Bellinelli himself is actually questionable with an ankle issue. If Bellinelli is out, Delaney at 4,100 is not a horrendous move. The guy is averaging 22 points over the last three. He had 29 in his last one. He can get you 25 here if Marco is out. So that is something to consider to try and differentiate yourself a bit. At shooting guard, my man Caris LeVert's at 56. I think that is a 28 to 30 point mark. So it's not a bad cash option. Kent Bazemore at 54, I really like for cash. I think that's a strong floor there as well. At small forward, the artist formerly known as Taurean Prince, he's at 5,800. You know what I'm going to say about him. Love him. Love the matchup. Love the cash here. This is like 27 as a floor, I feel like, and then he just pushes up to 30, 32, 33. We don't know if Damari Carroll is going to play with his knee problem. If he is out, Jumpin' Joe Harris will start, and then he becomes at 3,900. He actually becomes a GPP guy and a cash option. I wouldn't be looking at Carroll even if he does play. The Blue Swimmer playing quite well recently, 5,600 for Crab, 32 points in the last game, but I don't trust that as far as I can throw it. Tournament maybe, but at 5,600, man, you're taking away so much of the advantage there. Rondé is at 7,600. Rondé Hollis-Jefferson, that is. He's just as consistent as they come recently. You're getting you about 30 every night. But at 7,600, can he actually push through that level? I don't feel super confident about it. He's definitely not one of my number one guys. Whereas the Baptist, John Collins, 4,700 in his one game against the Nets this year. 21 minutes, 31 points. That is the sort of havoc that he can wreak on this front court if he's given enough chance. And at 4,700, man, if he even gets 18 minutes, I feel pretty good about him getting 25 points. So I like him as a GPP guy. And if for some reason Budenholzer goes, we're playing you 30. Yeah, this has got 50-point upside here for John Collins. And that might seem extraordinary for me to say that, but he's already had a 40-point game in 22 minutes this season, and we know how big men can absolutely just destroy the assholes of the Brooklyn Nets front court. Ersan's at 56. I feel that's really confident with the floor. Not so great on a huge ceiling, but I like the floor for him. At center, The Undertaker, 4,900. We haven't had this for a while. Uh, Ah, yes. This guy was rolling before his injury. He was killing it. Now, at this point, we don't know. Will he start? Will they continue to roll out this stiffness that is Miles Plumlee? I don't know. So that's the only thing that's turning me off the Undertaker here, because matchup, check. Brilliant matchup. Player that's a good player, check. Back from injury, good. Is it 18 minutes? Is it 25 minutes? If it's 25 minutes, I'm in at 4,900, but we're not going to know. So that would make him a GPP guy. Plumlee, yeah, good, all right. Jolly Loca for minimum salary, because he had 4 points in the last game. Muscala, Jarrett Allen, just none of those guys are really doing it for me at all. On to the DraftKings side of this equation. Rondé's at 6,700, and that is a price that I like. That is tournament worthy. Schroeder at 72, we're all, Cash as well. Schroeder at 72 I like, and formerly at 5,500 is also nice. The Baptist at 46 is strong, and then pretty much everything else I said for those guys. Yeah, nice floor on Ilyasova. Levert at 55 is pretty strong there. Bazemore at 56 is a solid floor cash guy also. The next game on the docket is the New York Knicks. It's the Minnesota Timberwolves. No spread currently released for this one. We don't know if Timmy Hardaway is going to be back. He is listed as questionable. And something I've been positing for a very long time about Hardaway is that once he comes back, it's going to have an impact on Mick Beasley. And Jeff Hornacek said basically the same thing. He went further than I did. He said that when Hardaway is back, you know, things are going to change. People are going to miss out. And then he went and quoted, he said that, you know, before the Hardaway injury, we didn't play Mike some nights, and it will probably go back to that. So I thought that he'd see a reduction in minutes and a reduction in usage. Hornacek's out there saying, well, he is just not going to play some nights. You know, we like what Lance Thomas does defensively. I don't really know why, but we like what Lance Thomas does. So there are going to be nights where Beasley doesn't play. And if Hardaway's back, he won't be at his full minutes, but if he's back, it's going to take a big chunk out of Beasley's value. The point guard situation.
My name is Jeff.
He's at 5,900, Jeff Teague. In his first game back, he put up 23 points in 26 minutes. If he plays the full complement of minutes, he should very comfortably get to that value, but I don't know if that's going to be the case. It is a very, very good matchup positivity-wise, so he would be a GPP option to me. Jarrett Jack had one of the worst triple-doubles you'll ever see. Shout-out Raymond Felton. 4,700 for Jack. He had 44 points, so it worked brilliantly for fantasy. Will he be able to do that again? Of course, my reliability factor on that's very, very low. While Frankie Ntilikina at 3,900, not really feeling too much there for him. Tyus Jones back to the bench, of course, for the Wolves. As for Timmy Hardaway, he comes in at a rock bottom price of 4,500. I actually think that if we hear that he is ready to play, that I would not mind throwing him into a tournament. You get 25 points, you've broken value. That is not a hard thing to do. Before he got injured, he dropped a 60-point game. Like, he was putting up numbers consistently. Now, he's not coming in and playing 34 minutes, but he could come in and play 25 to 26. So he is absolutely a tournament option. He hasn't played in 6 weeks, so that's a level of concern, clearly. But that price, man, it's so bloody low. We go at 6,200. His numbers have been better, averaging 32 over the last five. I still think he's more of a tournament guy, but if I'm going to go cash with him, it's probably going to be this one, because this matchup does really suit what he can do. Courtney Lee at 5,600 had been pretty rock solid with his numbers, but the specter of Hardaway looming, it maybe knocks in 2-3 points off the top there, and that takes away the reliability for him in cash. At small forward, Jim Butler is at 10,000. FanDuel's just gone, sorry, mate, he's too good. And that's pretty bloody right, because he's averaging 51 over his last three. He drops 60 in that last game for the Wolves, just crushing it continually. He can do it again against the Knicks. He's got, you know, an okay record against them, but nothing spectacular. But 10,000 makes him hard to use, I believe. I like what he's been doing, but I'm not in on him as a cash lock at all. I think there's some tournament upside there, but that price rise is not working for me. Beasley's at 7,300, and you know why? Because he's averaging 43 points in the last three, 39 in the last five. That is stupendous. But nah, sorry, man. Look, the Wolves' defense, I gave Tom Thibodeau a lot of piss. I don't know why I said piss there. I would never say that in my entire life. I gave him a lot of shit for the way that he was coaching and his defense. And the minutes management of these guys is still a joke. But the defensive stuff has really turned around. The offense is moving a lot better since they decided not to have Jeff Teague take every shot in the book. Things are really humming along for the Timberwolves at the moment. And the defense on Beasley, I don't really think that we're going to see a big Mick game in this one. At power forward, Taj is at 5,700. as little excitement as you can get for a player, I believe, in DFS. I don't like him for tournaments, and I don't feel great about his cash value. While my man,
percentages,
he's at 8,400. It's a big, big drop in price, which now opens him up to a bit of value, but I don't really like the spot here for Chris Stapps. He's struggled before against Townsie and the Wolves, so I think he is a fade in this spot. Speaking of Townsie, 9,100. He has feasted on the Knicks in the past with a 56-point average the last three times. I am in on him for cash. I'm in on him for tournaments. Well, Enes Kanter, 5,300 for Enes. The minutes are creeping back up. He's averaging 32 points in 27 minutes over the last three games. So back over the 20s, which never made sense to see him under 20. That was just another one of Hornacek's dumb decisions that never gets called out. At 5,300, I'm feeling more reliable for him towards cash, but I'm not ready to go there just yet. Whereas Koch at 4,300, he's a 30-point guy. He's a 15-point guy. That makes him an interesting tournament guy, but probably not the right matchup to go down that route. On DraftKings, Jim at 9,200 is one I can go for cash. Townsie at 89, loading up. Jeff Teague at 56. I feel pretty good about Teague, even if he is going to be limited, which we assume he will. Like, he played 26 in that first game back. He might be at 30 here. I think at 5,600, he is absolutely someone to take a look at. Porzingis at 78 is way more appealing at that price, but still probably more just of a tournament guy. While Beasley, 5,900, a much more reasonable price. But I still have my concerns with Timmy Hardaway coming back. If Hardaway's out, I'd be more inclined to use Beasley on DraftKings than I would say on FanDuel. Let's go to the next game. It's the Golden State Warriors. It's the Milwaukee Bucks. The Warriors are favored by 6. The total is 224. Steph Curry is listed as questionable. I think that he will play. Klay Thompson should be back from arrest, while Shawnee Livingston and Andre Iguodala are both listed as probable. But as we know, if you're listed as probable on the Warriors, that is as much of a chance as you being out than actually being listed as out. I do think Curry plays, though, having said all of that. Steph is at 10,200. Yeah, look, he's been absolutely on fire since he returned from his previous ankle injury, averaging 52 over the last five. That is killing it. I think at 10-2, though, and a nine-game slate might be more of a tournament guy, but he has been crushing it, especially now with Durant back also. Eric Bledsoe's at 7,700. He has had a very good record against the Warriors, I guess quietly, 41 points the last three times. 7,700 is decently high. It is a come down from where he was at 8,300, so there is something to be said for looking at Bled here, but I wouldn't feel super strongly about it. Shooting guard Brogo at 5,600. I like Brogdon a lot here at that spot, getting lots of minutes as a starting shooting guard, handling the ball. The numbers are up. I feel pretty good about him getting to 25 or 26 here at least. Clay's at 66. That's a fade. Chrissy Middleton at 7,000. Big drop in salary, so that does open my eyes and go, well, what are we looking at here? But I'm still not fully invested in a $7,000 worth of Chris. Tone Snell. Nah, mate. Small forward, Yanni, 10-8. The numbers have dropped for him since the start of the season. 10-8 is absolutely worth a look, especially for tournaments, but there is something there to see for cash. I'd actually rather spend the 10-8 on Yanni than Jim Butler, to be honest. Even though it is more for Yanni, and Butler has been out producing him, I just feel more comfortable using Antetokounmpo at those prices. Well, Durant at 10-6, I'd much rather use Durant than Antetokounmpo at that sort of a salary. I think Durant's, you know, almost locked in at a 50, whereas Yanni is maybe not there, but possibly a higher ceiling for him. At power forward, Jordy Bell's at 4,300. I'm not interested in that. The Muppet, John Henson at 5,000. Strong numbers for him recently, but he has really struggled against the Warriors in the past, tournaments only. Dave West, Draymond maybe, but probably a fade. Power forwards really weirdly have struggled significantly against the Bucks this season. One of the worst teams to go against as a power forward, so that's probably a fade for me for Draymond. Thon McCur, Zaza Pachulia, they're the two centers, and we will be leaving them alone. On DraftKings, the only one I really like here is Antetokounmpo at 10-5 and Durant at 10-4. Durant at 10-2. Curry at 10-4 is okay, but I think it's probably a little bit fade-worthy there. Bledsoe at 6,900 has some level of value. Brogdon at 55 is also worth a cash-looking tournament, while the Muppet John Henson at 48. It's got a little bit of upside as a tournament, guys. Very similar to how it looks on FanDuel for him. All right, let's go to the next one. It's the Portland Trailblazers. It's the New Orleans Pelicans. We don't know if Tone Davis is going to be back. He's listed as questionable. Dame Lillard has popped back up on the injury report as probable. He missed those games with it, then came back. So we'll see how that pans out. If Tone Davis is out, then Rajon Rondo at 5,300 is absolutely worth a look. He did put up 23 in that first game. without Davis. That's not great, but I still think that he is worth a look, even though the Blazers have been one of the harder teams for point guards to go up against. Lillard's at 9,000 now. The tournament guy at that sort of a price, well, Shabazz Napier at 44 is not really happening for me. Shooting guards, Drew Holiday, 7,200. Fade if Davis is in. Play if Davis is out. I can get behind him. Now, he had not a great game in that first one with Davis out. Still put up 36, which is, yeah, enough value at that $7,000 price point. So, tone out, then Drew gets into your lineups, I believe. Or CJ McCollum at 7,800. Give me Drew Holiday every day of the week if Davis happens to be out. At small forward, Etwan's at 49. He would be a tournament guy in a Davis absence, otherwise a fade. Darius Miller, Evan Turner, Dante Cunningham. I could consider Dante as a GPP guy. He had 18 points in 18 minutes in Davis's absence in that last game, and he could be a 25-point guy, but I don't feel good about it. So he'd be a let's throw him into a tournament to get some other big names and let's load up on our LeBrons and Durants and Adetokounmpos and go with it that way. At power forward, El-Farouq Aminu.
Sometimes may be good, sometimes may be shit.
Yep. So that is the definition of a GPP guy. Absolutely no confidence in him for cash, but does he come out and nail five triples? We've seen it from him way more times than I would expect this season. Eddie Davis, 3,900. Good game from Ed in the last one, playing a lot more minutes over Yusuf Nurkic, and he might be used a little bit more even alongside Nurkic if both Davis and Cousins play. So he could be a GPP option if Davis is ruled in. At center, Boog, 11,000. We're smashing Boog if Davis is out. He's still worth a look even if Davis plays, but if not, he's worth going at. Whereas Tone at 10,700 is also pretty strong if he happens to go. Yusuf Nurkic, 6,800. The matchup against Boog might be a problem foul-wise. I think he's more of a tournament guy. He has struggled against the Pels in the past, averaging just 14 points in his last three encounters in 22 minutes, which is obviously not a very high rate of return. DraftKings, Boog's at 10.8 and Tone Davis is 9.8. Of course, we are all over Tone Davis at 9.8 if he happens to play. Lillard at 86 is a decent cash option, as is Drew Holiday at 7,000. And again, the same story. I prefer Drew over CJ here. Rondo at 5,900. Even if Davis is out, that's too high. Whereas Aminu at 4,400, a very, very strong GPP guy. But again, we know his flakiness in terms of consistency is a huge problem. Let's go to the next one. It's the Memphis Grizzlies and the Denver Nuggets. The Nuggets are favored by 7.5, and the total is 207.5 points. Chandler Parsons is out. Mick Conley is out for the Grizz. Chalmers at 3,900. I don't expect Kobe Simmons to play. He is playing in the G League Showcase. He played today. They have another game on Saturday, so I don't think that Memphis is going to fly him down for this game. So Chalmers could see some more minutes. He played 25 in the last game. Terrible. But he played them. And at 3,900, he had some weird blow-up. He had a 40-point game once this season, which is astonishing. At 3,900, that is absolutely GPP-worthy in a game against a team where point guards can put up numbers. Andy Harrison at 4,300, really strong performance for him in the last one. If it was 3,900, I'd be over it. 4,300, I don't have the confidence in Harrow just at this spot. Let's go to the Blue Arrow. 6,800 for Jamal Murray. The numbers have been a little bit disappointing for him recently, averaging just 28 over his last three. The minutes are up, but the production hasn't quite been there, and the Memphis defense and pace might be a factor for me to fade him given the salary there. At shooting guard, Will Barton's at 6,000. That is a strong, strong fade in my opinion. Gaz Harris at 7,000. Love Gaz. That price is too high in a matchup which is not ideal just pace-wise. And Tyreek at 8,500. Tyreek's getting you 40 a game pretty much, almost as a minimum. So at 8,500, I could absolutely consider him worth a cash look. He's doing everything for this team. At small forward, Baby Neck Wilson Chandler, $5,000 for him. Jim Ennis, minimum salary. Don't care about Chandler Parsons being out. Dylan Brooks, Torrey Craig, just bunches of nothing. Trey Lyles at 6,100. Wasn't great in the last game. Still gave you 25 points. So that does make him an option. If you're having a shit game and still putting up 25 fantasy points, then I'm all about it at 6,100. So I like him for cash. Maybe his upside's not that high, but I'm still pretty excited about using him. Jarrell Martin, Jermichael Green. Now, Green smashed it in the last game. He's at 5,100 and he's averaging 28 over the last five. I have very, very little confidence in Jermichael Green, but this might be a spot at only 5,100 where you could say, hey, shit, maybe he gets me 28 and that's enough at 5,100. So I think Jermichael is in play here. Jokic at 9,300 against Marc Gasol, that's been a problem for him. So I would rather go with Marc Gasol, save $900. Gasol is an option here. And that's a 40-point type spot here for Gasol. It's probably a 40-pointer for Jokic, but when you're saving $900, I know which way that I'm going to head. Mason Plumlee, Brandon Wright, Deontay Davis aren't really doing it for me. On DraftKings, a bunch of guys I like for cash and tournament. Trey Lyles at 58, Gaz Harris at 58, Farton Will Barton at 55, and the Blue Arrow at 58. All really strong options. Those prices are very low, and in the case of Murray, have come down $700. That's a great price. Tyreek's at 83, so I'm a little bit softer on him than what I would be on FanDuel, while Marc Gasol at 7,500. Again, preferred to Nikola Jokic, given that that low salary. Mario Chalmers, of course, again, just another GPP type of option with that Kobe Simmons heading or in the G League showcase for the Memphis Hustle. The last game of the night, the Houston Rockets and the Phoenix Suns. The last time these two teams played, the Rockets scored, I think, 185 points in the first half. It was just a disgusting, disgusting smashing. The Rockets have like eight guys who are healthy here. So we're going to see big minutes, regardless of the blowout status. They have got eight players. The other guys that's available, like Shinano Onwuaku, he put out a tweet today with nothing official from the Rockets saying surgery tomorrow. He's been dealing with a wrist problem, but it's not an injury report. So I don't think he's going to be available. Tariq Black is out. Nene is out. Luke Marmute is out. It's going to be all Ryan Anderson and Clint Capella at center. That means more minutes for PJ Tucker, big minutes for Gerald Green. And who knows if D'Antoni even plays Bronte Weber as that eighth man. He's been a DMP the last two games. So there's a lot happening here in this one. For the Suns, Isaiah Cannon is upgraded to questionable, while Joshie Jackson is ruled doubtful with a hip strain. At point guard, Cannon's at 3,600. I don't care for that at all. Chrissy Paul's at 10,800. He just might force his way into 60 points just from the minutes. And it is a great matchup. I guess in a blowout, he might only play 32 and they might really get Weber out there. At 10,800, he's more of a tournament sort of a guy. Euless at 4,900, I would consider if Isaiah Cannon happens to be out. At shooting guard, Devin Booker, 78, totally locked in on that. I love that for cash. I think this is a 50-point opportunity here for Devin, especially with Joshie Jackson out, a lot of minutes coming his way. Eric Gordon at 8,100, that's super expensive, but I don't actually consider it a bad play. He has been putting up consistent numbers with Chris Paul out, as he did, also with Jim Harden out, as he did when Chris Paul was out. I think 40 is almost an expectation. Troy Daniels, no. Small forward Ariza, 5,300, terrible in the last game, but I think that's a strong cash option again. TJ Warren, I like for cash too at 7,500, and Gerald Green at 4,800. Given the lack of rotation options the Rockets have got, 4,800 for Gerald Green sounds pretty bloody good to me. At power forward, Dragan Bender is going to start because Marquise Chris is out. Minimum salary for Bender, he had 43 against the Thunder in the Suns last game. I don't expect that, but at 3,500, I expect him to exceed 20 points. So that makes him probably the first guy that I would lock into my cash lineups. And tournaments, maybe not, because I think he's probably going to be owned in so high a percentage, but he might be owned in that high of a percentage, and he's that cheap that you just have to have him in to unlock some other options. Ryan Anderson's at 43, and I hate Ryan Anderson for fantasy. Love him as a bloke, hate him for fantasy. As good a matchup as you're going to find. So many big men out. 4,300. Can he for once hit a friggin' shot? He's away from home, so that's a positive for him as well. 4,300. Tournaments, this is probably the only time I'm going to suggest using Ryan Anderson. At center, Capella's at 7,600. Man, he should play 30 minutes, and he should be able to get 40 points, so I like him. Alex Len, Tyson Chandler. Yeah, that's probably a... Well, that's definitely a no from me. On to DraftKings. Very similar sort of stuff. Chrissy Paul at 10-6, Devin Booker at 82, TJ Warren 62, and Clint Capella 71. All of those guys are strong plays. Trevor Ariza at 49 is great. Eric Gordon at 74 is good. And Bender at 43. Not as strong as what he is on FanDuel. Probably a fade in tournaments, but I still do like him for cash over there. That wraps up the 9-game slate. Let's now look at the other sides for Yahoo. Let's look at some tournament guys that I do like. The Blue Swimmer, the Mup, John Henson, Marcin Gortat, Koch, Andy Harrison, Tyler Euless as some tournament-specific type of players that I like. For cash, it's Tyson Chandler and Dragan Bender. Chandler not really having any tournament value, but Bender, yes. Brogdon, Sabonis, TJ Warren, Jim Butler, Chris Paul, and John Wall. And if you've got then cash left over with some of those cheap options, of course, a guy like Tone Davis, if he is available, is worth a look. On Moneyball for tournaments, LeBron, Chris Paul, Victor Oladipo, Jim Butler, Kevin Love, Thaddeus Young, Dwayne Dedman, The Undertaker, Ryan Anderson, The Baptist, Timmy Hardaway. And then for cash, we go with Andy Harrison, Dragan Bender, Gerald Green, Malcolm Brogdon, formerly Rajon Rondo, Trevor Ariza, The Blue Arrow, Eric Gordon, Dennis Schroeder, Hollis Jefferson, DeMontis Sabonis, Capella, TJ Warren, Brattles Beal, Devin Booker, Johnny Wall, and Boog Cousins. And on Draft Stars, again, don't play the target. And hey, unless, did it go off? Did I miss it today and it went off? Absolutely no chance, yeah. Let's double check the Draft Stars target while I'm speaking. There's absolutely zero chance it went off. Nope, it's got a jackpot of 138,000. It's not going off. On Draft Stars, tournaments, Boogie Cousins, LeBron, Chris Paul, Dwight Howard, Dennis Schroeder, The Don, Frank the Tank, Kyle O'Quinn, and for cash, Jeff Green, Corey Joseph, Dragan Bender, Joe Ingles, Jeff Teague, Trevor Ariza, Trey Lyles, Gaz Harris, the Blue Arrow, Tony Warren Jr., Eric Gordon, DeMontis Sabonis, Brattles Beal, Kemba Walker, Devin Booker, Vic Oladipo, and Johnny Wall. That does it for another week of the Locked On Fantasy Basketball Podcast. If you are listening to this on Apple Podcasts, go ahead and leave a 5-star review. It's one of the best ways that you can support the show. Go and check out the rest of the Locked On Podcast Network. You can also find this podcast on Google Play, TuneIn, Stitcher, and Spotify, and on YouTube, where you can leave a thumbs up, leave a comment, and subscribe. Check out basketballmonster.com. Good luck for your daily fantasy teams. Good luck for your seasonal teams. Find me on Twitter at redrock_bball. We are done here, guys. Thank you so much for listening, everyone. See ya. Nikola Mirotić.